Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Well, like I said, welcome back.
It's good to see you too, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very good to be here. I've been here every Sunday. I don't know what you've been here every Sunday,
I've
too.
I've been here every day.
That's right.
5 hours yesterday.
I bet. Well, we have a new study for you, and the books are in the mail. For those of you who are interested in books, I didn't ask who was interested in books, I just ordered some and I can send them back. So you're not committed to books, even if you might have thought you were. But I want to introduce this book. This is Neighborhood Church, Transforming Your Congregation into a Powerhouse of Mission. Isn't that a great subtitle?
I want that book.
Yeah. See, I just sold one right there.
Yeah. I want that church.
He saw the cover. He judged it. That's how it works, right? Always judge books.
Guaranteed that after I read that,
we will be a powerhouse of mission.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't come by this book honestly. This book was recommended to the entire denomination by our co-moderators, Cindy Coleman and Vilmarie Simfron Oliveri. So there has been a practice the past several years of the moderators of the General Assembly will recommend a book for the entire denomination to read. They're calling it One Church, One Book. And so this is, I think technically this was last year's. They may give us another one this year, so brace yourselves. This was commended to the entire denomination to read and talk about this book. You may be asking yourself, we're contemporary issues. We're not the Mission in Action Committee, although many of you are. What are we doing reading this book that really, like, shouldn't the session be studying this book? Shouldn't the Mission Committee be studying this book? And the answers are, well, yeah, probably. But I also want to bring this book to you, partly because you are like a ready-made study group right here sitting in front of me, and partly because the things that we've been talking about, about how do we really make a difference in the world around us, what are the issues that that our neighbors are dealing with, even the conversation that we had at the beginning of December about, here's racism. It is sort of culturally present all around us and within us. What do we do? What do we do about that? Particularly for us as a legacy church, we've been around for a while. Presbyterians have been around and in power for a good long time. And our place in culture has changed, not necessarily even visibly among us, because we recognize everybody here, right? But the way that we relate to the world around us has changed in a way that really, I think, shapes how we can and can't respond to the needs and issues that are around us. So what this book is really a call for churches to get back into their neighborhoods. And because you are a particular subset of the church and not sort of acting as a committee here, I want to also remember that sort of our neighborhoods are not only everything within four blocks of 28th and Ashworth, but that our neighborhoods are also where you live and where you live and where you live and where you live. That the ways that we are planted in our neighborhoods happens in our daily lives in addition to in our church life. So even if you're like, but my daily life and my church life don't overlap in the way that I think makes this relevant as a church. I want us to think about this actually kind of as individuals as well. So pieces of this will make more sense to us as individuals. Pieces of this will make less sense to us as individuals, because this is obviously written sort of to and about churches. But I want us to also think about this in a more daily embedded kind of way. How about that? So we the segue that I made from where we were last fall to where we are now was sort of as we were looking at, you know, we were looking at sort of political issues for faithful voters. We looked at a couple of particular words that were challenging, and the piece that really stuck with me was when we were talking about racism, and the question was, okay, so what do we do? Where are the solutions to this? And I do think a lot of the solutions come back to relationships with our neighbors in a really particular kind of way. And what this book is going to try to do is to point us into a particular kind of relationship with our neighbors. A kind of relationship with our neighbors that really takes our neighbors at least as seriously as we take ourselves and our own sort of sense of what our neighbors should be and do. There are going to be some specific kind of practical applications of what we talk about. Not today, you won't have homework today, but you might have homework next week. Because sitting together and talking about our neighbors out there, many of us don't even know the neighbors that someone else is talking about. That's not going to be as powerful for us as actually sort of getting out and trying a conversation with a neighbor. So there will be some homework if you really want to get full value for your money. We can all be building community and being the church in the world, even if we're not doing that sort of under the formal structures of Covenant Presbyterian Church. There are brief videos to go along with each chapter of the book, so if you're not a reader, you don't have to read. There's an introductory video that that kind of tries to give sort of a snapshot of the whole book. You won't feel like you have like a sense of the structure of the book and where we're going. I'll talk about that later. But sort of a sense of the feel. Just a small advisory, the video has subtitles in Spanish for accessibility for non-English speakers. It does not have subtitles in English for accessibility for people with difficulty hearing. So we're going to try to fix that with volume, but I technologically I can't fix that with subtitles. So. So here's just a few minutes introductory video, and if you read Spanish, you are in luck. There is a section where they speak out loud in Spanish that will have English subtitles. But when they're speaking English, Spanish subtitles, two languages, one experience.
Neighborhood Church out of our 60 plus years of experience in ministry in the hopes that it could inspire congregations like yours to discover possibilities and opportunities for ministry and mission that you never imagined were possible. Down around the corner, half a mile from here, see the long trains run and you watch them disappear.
Igual, ha sido muy maravilloso porque yo cuando llegué a la terminal de autobuses, yo me sentía triste, yo lloraba, yo me sentía, bueno, no sé, solo pidiéndole a Dios que me diera fuerzas, porque mi niña estaba detenida, yo no sabía ni a dónde la tenía.
Wow. Theologian Paul Tillich famously said, "The first duty of love
is to listen.
I think good listening is a ministry. It's like ministry. And that's because if you're a really good listener, you have to be intentional. Yeah. And that is something that historically we have not been very good at all.
House of Neighborly Service was started in 1917 by Presbyterian missionaries. Wow. And I think that's where the bond between House of Neighborly Service and Divine Redeemer was created. And here we are today, still working together.
In indigenous communities, they often planted together three crops simultaneously: corn, beans, and squash, affectionately known as the Three Sisters.
I'm sure you would agree that of all the assets that we have as congregations, our physical plants, our campuses, are some of the most powerful. And yet, how many churches go from Sunday to Sunday without maximizing their square footage to serve the neighborhoods around us?
Well, when I got here, you could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet Monday through Friday.
And when we say Austin-y, I mean, that we need to unpack that a bit. It's a melting pot of a lot of different people from different backgrounds.
If we're going to be faithful to the message of Jesus Christ, we have to learn how to be flexible in the ways in which we proclaim that message.
So there's a very quick sort of flyover of the book that we'll be working with here. Okay, I said no homework today, but you do have in class work today. So I'm going to pass around pieces of environmentally friendly reused paper. Please take one and pass them along. And environmentally friendly reused colored pencils. Please take one that has colored pencils sticking out the end. There's a few that don't. And pass those along. And as we pass those out, I'm going to let you know what you're going to do with these. I'm going to ask you to draw, if drawing is at all a comfortable medium for you. And if words are the better medium for you, you can do words, but I kind of prefer drawing because it's kind of a spatial thing. And I'd like to invite you to use the blank side of the paper, Roger.
This was my story.
And draw your relationship with your neighborhood. Draw your relationship with your neighborhood. And so we could think about neighborhood as sort of the neighborhood right around the church, right? We could define the neighborhood in a certain specific geographical way relative to our building. You can define your neighborhood as wherever it is you are most of the time, whether that's at your house, whether that is a house and another location, whether that is a house and the church and another location, however it is that you are related to your neighbors, what does that look like? And I would ideally prefer that you do include your house somewhere in there, because for many of us, the relationship between our house and the people whose houses are next to us is sort of a complicated thing. As you do this, also kind of think about not only where you are now, but where you have been. So has your relationship... That's a lot to put on one paper. You're going to have 5 whole minutes to do this. So partly we have talked about sort of shifts in how our relationships with our neighbors have changed over the years, however many years we're talking about. We've got the ability to think about where we are right now in reference to that. So draw me a picture. with pictures or shapes or lines or look like Rembrandt or use words. You know yourself well enough to know whether or not sort of getting in your right brain with a picture is going to help or not. And draw me in whatever way works, you and your neighbors. Everyone, pencils down, please. Okay, I'm going to invite folks to be brave, and if you are so moved, share sort of your picture with us. And again, your picture may be words, and that's okay. You don't have to show us everything in your picture, right? This is just sort of a, what does this illustrate about your relationship with your neighborhood? Whatever that neighborhood may be. So I do maps. It's kind of how I think. So I have my home, which is up here, way up there. But my home is sort of this big connected blobby thing because there's my home, but there's also my kids' school. And there's the church that Leanne and the kids are at right now on their way there, depending on how things are going. And then there's also this church down here, on the scale. And within these, there are some people sort of squiggled in there. And then I've got some of my physical neighborhood up here, which is the houses that surround my house. And some of the houses are like solid lines because I have actual connections with the people who live in those houses. And then some of the houses are little dashed lines because I know there are houses there and evidence suggests that people live in them. And that's my story about those houses. But then I've got crosses kind of all around in various places that kind of point toward members of this congregation, because members of this congregation are also my neighbors in a very particular way. And so my neighborhood is sort of like big and blobby and amorphous in ways that have made this sort of a challenging book for me to think into. So that's my neighborhood. Who would be comfortable telling us about theirs?
Well, I have my house, my daughter's house, short road there, short road to church, mm-hmm. long way to the neighbors, don't know the neighbors. Even though I've lived there for 23 years, I probably know one family, one or two families, that's it.
So your neighbors who physically live much closer to you are sort of relationally much farther away.
Much farther.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, ours would be just the opposite.
Yeah?
We live just over there, and we're on a horseshoe.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which, over the years, we've known most everybody on both sides of the horseshoe. Right now, I would say we know more on our side of the horseshoe, mm-hmm. and we have a younger than us couple that are instrumental in keeping the neighborhood.
Could be about anybody, could.
Pretty much it is. Most everybody in our neighborhood. We've been there a long, long time. There's about three or four people mm-hmm. who actually lived in their houses when we moved in, so that's been a long time.
Yeah.
But this younger couple, she's kind of the one that keeps things going.
She's kind of the connector in the neighborhood.
The connector, and in the spring and the fall, I think it is, they do pancakes under the pergola. So it's a Saturday morning breakfast thing.
Yeah.
He does pancakes on the grill and stuff, and everybody brings food, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
I
live in a similar neighborhood.
First of all, it'd be obvious that I'm not an artist. But we live here, and then we're fortunate enough around our horseshoe that our daughter, son-in-law, and grandson live there, which that's kind of a wonderful setup. I know just
fewer people than I do, let's just say.
Yeah. It's a nice neighborhood, and I just know three or four houses that other than that, I'm not familiar with the rest of the people.
Yeah.
There's a house across the street, and just to the right, looking out there, I put some squiggly lines around there.
Oh, yeah, what are those?
They have, these people have a big old pin oak tree.
Oh.
Whose leaves fell, and those leaves kind of blew all over the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I got the squiggly lines, that I saw the gal out in her yard a couple days ago.
Confession time here.
And I said quite facetiously, I didn't raise my voice or anything. I said, I just wanted you to know that your neighbors really appreciate that you're taking care of your own leaves.
Jeez.
How else would you? But anyway, she was not happy. So that's why I wrote the squiggly line.
Okay.
Interesting. How would you handle that if your neighbor across didn't take care of their yard and just messed up everybody else's? What would be the appropriate way? How should I have handled that?
That's a good question. And this is part of what's hard about neighborhoods. I'm not going to answer your question. But this is part of what's hard about neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
Is that they're full of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doggone people.
They don't have the same.
Right, so neighborhoods are this sort of mix of values and approaches and sensibilities. And how do we live in relationship with our neighbors who, in all sorts of different ways, are not us, right? They may be not us linguistically or culturally or politically, but they also may be not us in terms of how they keep their yards. Mm-hmm. And that these, you know, the ways that we handle the things that happen on our private property make a difference to the people who are not on our private property. Mm-hmm. This is going to be actually right there for conversations about this book. So thank you for that.
We all realize that the neighbors,
mm-hmm,
that they don't keep up their yard, that's one thing, but they go one step beyond that and just flood our yards with all their trash. So,
have dandelions.
Well, I don't.
They don't have any grass.
Even dandelions don't grow in their yard.
I don't feel that I did the wrong thing, and how can you diplomatically bring that to their attention? So I said something, didn't, no naughty words, I didn't raise my voice.
But,
so I got, I thought what I did was appropriate.
Right. And so here we've got two different maps of the same physical neighborhood, right? No, this is good stuff. This is really good stuff here. Because here we've got these two different maps of this same physical neighborhood. And one map, and you know, this is people's personalities, right? This is temperaments, this is being an extrovert or an introvert. There are all kinds of pieces of this, right? And those two maps are simultaneously true, right? So we've got a map that has not a whole lot of neighbors sort of relationally actively present, but has family on the corner. I didn't get family on the corner from Julie's map.
Yeah, why not?
That's okay, right? Because Julie's map was talking about a different piece of what it is to be in this neighborhood. The relationship with this sort of neighborhood connector who brings people together in their backyard and and, you know, puts on events for the neighborhood, and that's also true. And true at the same time is the highlight of this neighborhood is that our kids live right around the corner, and there's also some tension here with this other neighbor.
Just one.
You're the most courageous person I've ever met in my life. Did you mean courageous or stupid or what?
So on my map, I could also tell you stories about which of these neighbors are the connector. And I'm just even up here in my residential neighborhood. In my residential neighborhood, I could tell you stories about which neighbors are the connectors. And are always sort of keeping an eye on everybody else in the neighborhood, whether we would like them to or not. Usually we would like them to. But I could also tell you about the neighbors that we've gone 2 years and have talked to twice. We could tell you about the neighbors that, as far as we can tell, are kind of in and out. And nobody has any particular relationship with them. We just hope they're nice. So all of those things are also true about this neighborhood. So neighborhoods are multi-layered kinds of things. I realized as I was drawing this big loopy connected house thing, I had not left a spot where I could loop my father in. So yeah, he's over here. So yeah, so there's always more you can add to the neighborhood. Yeah, you didn't put your kids on your map, so. So, in 5 minutes, you drew a map of your neighborhood that is complete in every respect, and I'm the only one who didn't. I think that's the moral here. So there's so much more going on in your neighborhood, and if we're gonna, what's the word, love our neighbors as ourselves, right? That's gonna be a really complicated thing. Because there's going to be the neighbors we like and the neighbors we don't like, and there's going to be the neighbors who need something that we can't provide, and there's going to be neighbors who don't want the thing we can provide, and there's going to be the neighbors who we really wish we could get to know and we just can't figure out how, and there are going to be the neighbors that we would depend on to, you know, be the ones to answer the call if we had fallen and couldn't figure out what to do with ourselves. And some of those are the same neighbors, right? Which is part of what's crazy about this. What else is difficult about living in a neighborhood these days?
Everyone goes to work. They're gone in the morning, they come home at night,
uh-huh.
and they just stay in their house or uh-huh. they work in their yard. But, you know, I mean, they don't miss.
Some of them live in their yard.
They don't go and they don't
yeah.
come to your house, and or you don't go to their house
right.
and knock on their door.
Right. Neighborhoods in general are less relationally connected than they used to be. And this, I'm pretty sure it's at least intuitively true. And I'm not that old. It is at least intuitively true. I think it is also sort of empirically true. I think there are ways to measure, you know, how much time do neighbors physically spend with each other. And some of it is a higher percentage of the adult population is employed outside the home during the day. There's more to do indoors once you get back. There are fewer children per capita than once upon a time there were. And especially if we've lived in a neighborhood for a very long time and we raised our kids there, and now we're older than having kids at home, and so is everyone else in our neighborhood. So there's that piece. Kids' time is used differently. All of these things sort of contribute to less just kind of flow of people between houses in a neighborhood. Yeah?
More distractions.
More distractions.
If you
live in a neighborhood that has young families, it is oftentimes very, very mobile because people are moving to different jobs or moving up the ladder to different places, and the neighborhood's changing all the time.
But neighborhoods where children connect more because the kids get together.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Whereas my old neighborhood, there were a lot of children, and in my new neighborhood, there's
I grew up in a farming neighborhood, and most of the people, there was very, very little turnover. Most people have been there a long time.
Right.
Some had kids at home, and some didn't. And the neighborhood was larger too, partly because people had were more permanent, and the people knew each other further away, especially because of the connection, because of farming. A large part of the social life was visiting neighbors.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not true here.
Right.
And what about people who live in a senior living center, retirement center, and so forth, and don't have homes, but have neighbors all around them in other apartments?
Right, yeah. So neighboring in an attached dwelling rather than a detached dwelling is different. Neighboring in a single generation neighborhood is different from living in a multi-generation neighborhood. And that has benefits and drawbacks, right? There are ways that makes it easier to neighbor, and there are ways that makes it harder to neighbor. So keep these neighborhoods with you, because these are the neighborhoods we're talking about. We're talking about the neighborhoods where you have the relationships that you have. So again, here's just a very quick synopsis of the book. Again, this is a book that's written sort of to and for churches, where a church building is sort of a neighborhood institution, right? The building is located where it is, and that's sort of its relationship to the neighborhood. Some of y'all are institutions in your neighborhoods, right? as Julie said, you know, there are a few folks in your neighborhood who have been there as long as you have. And there are many folks in all of our neighborhoods who haven't been there as long as we have, right? And I think the only people who, well, three of you have lived in your neighborhood less long than I have, right? You moved probably most recently. You moved a little bit before that, right?
3 years.
Has it been 3 years? Were you already there when I got here?
Oh, close to it.
Okay. So,
we're almost 5 years.
So, and 5 years is pushing toward like pillar of the neighborhood. In the
right? 28 years in Crocker.
Right. And so some of you are institutions in your neighborhood, whether you know it or not. And this is written toward churches who are institutions in their neighborhoods, because of the ways that we are built and the functions that we serve, right? So this is a table of contents. I'm sure you knew that. So there are five chapters in the book. It's a relatively short book and quick read. So there are five chapters. The first is sort of looking at why do we belong in neighborhoods? And it talks about communal conversion. We're going to talk about conversion next week, which is not only sort of that one sort of, you know, I once was lost but now I'm found kind of conversion story, but in what ways are we transformed? In what ways are we transformed, particularly by relationships with our neighbors? What changes us about relationships with our neighbors? Then we're going to talk about how to listen. how do we listen? Because it's as the quotation went by in the video this morning, Paul Tillich said, if Paul Tillich said it, you know it has to be true. The first duty of love is to listen. The first duty of love is to listen. So we're going to talk about how we listen. We're going to talk about partnerships, transforming partnerships. So this is one of those places where that feels like a very much sort of a church thing, and the church as an institution partners with some other organization in the community. What would partnership look like in the neighborhoods that we're in? We know things that our neighborhoods want and need, and as we listen to our neighbors, we hear more about that. Whom do we bring in? How do we partner with our neighbors? There's a chapter on integrating our space. So how does our physical space, our physical location, relate to the neighbors around us? And how do we think about the spaces that we inhabit in relationship to our neighbors? So again, that means one thing is going to sound like one thing, talking about churches and the way we use our buildings, like we own the building, God owns the building. But it means something else for us in sort of our dwellings, whether attached or detached, as we relate to our neighbors in those spaces. As Russ said, we don't go to each other's houses and socialize in the same way anymore. How do we relate to that? And then finally, the final chapter is called Sustaining the Vision. It's going to talk about sort of worship and prayer practices that help a church be rooted in their neighborhood. How do we, as people of faith, sustain being rooted in our neighborhood? So that's kind of where we're going to go over the next handful of weeks. We will get to know our neighbors right around us wherever it is we happen to be, especially Monday through Saturday. So, thank you.
Where did you get the book?
They are on their way, and I don't have the tracking number. I believe Carrie does. So, the books should be on their way, and we will let you know as soon as they're in. I'll bring them next week as well, assuming they get here before.
You can also go to PCUSA and they're on there.
Yes, but presumably they'll take as long to get to Ann's house as they will to get to the church.
No, I meant the videos.
Oh, the videos. Yes, the videos are online. Yeah.
I had a quick question before we leave, directed at the Radicans. They lived on the same street for over 50 years,
uh-huh.
And they had neighbors.
Yeah.
And now they have moved, you said, about 3 years, and for none of the rest of us live in a facility like that. Being a social guy, I'm just kind of curious, in the 3 years compared to the 50 plus, you have as many close neighbors in your new home as you had in your...
You
right.
Took my picture.
No, I wasn't interpreting. I'm just curious.
I have here
you
a house
more.
With the two of us, mm-hmm. And there's one other house in the neighborhood. Guess who that is?
Marcus.
Yeah. So then we moved to a multi-place, which we have 80-plus people living in. And this... There's stick figures with everybody holding hands up like this. In a circle, there's nobody outside, everybody's included. And it's a group that the raised hands signifies the fact that it is a very caring community. People really look out at each other, and if you have any need, I don't care what it is, they're willing to help.
Wonderful.
Well, that's very interesting, because as a footnote, we've lived in our house for 42 years. Right now, the only person that I consider a close neighbor, Sandy Stuck. Well, that's, I'm not bragging, I'm embarrassed to say that. And we're Sandy's a little older than we are, but anyway, Sandy's older than that. So think of that. Lived on that in that house for 42 years, and neighbor very little. Now, when we first moved, the house was only 3 years old. We'd have block parties. We'd shut off the street, see, because nobody had been in that neighborhood more than 3 years. And now it's gone to the point. So I would, Dan, I'm not smart enough to look at your deal. But I'm just curious, after 50 so many years at one home, and then 3 years in this new home, and I think that's the one of the main selling points for a facility like where you live, is that for social people, I'm not saying that some of us have the social needs equal social needs. I think Claudia is more liking privacy of our own home, where this is too much togetherness.
No, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
You go to your place.
Well, that's
the
in her
life. Second best decision to ever make.
Thank you, Dan.
I won't tell you what the first one is.
The first one was during Betty's.
That was great. Because she made all the rest of the decisions.
So it's like this.
Okay,
second
y'all.
Decision you made.
This conversation right here is why I think this book is relevant to us all. That conversation right there. So thank you so much for that. I'll see you next week.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.